Hello, and welcome to another Hometown Daily News Show. I am Mayor Watt. Hometown is hometown.com. I stream here on Twitch. If you're in my chat or you're watching this via YouTube or listening to this via the podcast, thank you very much for coming. Please come over to either YouTube or to Twitch or even Twitter. I only announce there that I'm doing a show, and even that's sporadic, mainly because I'm consuming a lot of information via the hometown.com site. It's a news aggregator that funnels a bunch of information, articles from around the internet, into Hometown's shows, little channels, little communities, like Create, News, Education, Entertainment, Social, and Technology. And within them are basically niche subjects. Like Smack Talk, which is about talking about Apple, and Steampunkology, which is about the steampunk community and the world of steampunk. And maybe you can call it a multiverse of steampunk. There's even various iterations of it that focus on timelines, a particular time. The Word in Technology focuses on a particular subject of tech. It's a show that I want to bring to Twitch, but I just haven't done it yet. Only so many hours in the day, and I'd like to spend more time on Twitch, but I just can't right now. Including today, for the last week and a half, since the first, I've been struggling with trying to get everybody to just back off from needing me in the middle of the day or something else happening that's pulling me away. And for years, this stuff has kind of happened, but I'm struggling to stop it from happening now because I really want to do this all the time. And so today was a unique one because this hasn't happened for quite some time, but my site crashed and couldn't figure out what it was, and still to this moment don't know what it was. But all of a sudden, all of the resources at Hometown hit the wall, and the site was brought down for about an hour, and nobody can figure out exactly what it was. So I'm just going to move on past this and talk about today's news. I've made promises that I wasn't going to talk about certain things, and I will not talk about those things. But I will talk about the news that gets aggregated, but I will make a conscious effort to avoid, unless somebody asks me to talk about these things that are just kind of, it's done, there's no need to talk about it anymore. Although I do have some knowledge of a tenured professor who is talking about it in such a way that it's people are pointing fingers about being triggered in both directions. Oh, excuse me, a hiccup. In both directions. Here, let me try and stop these hiccups. Anyway, so let's just get into today's news. I think this is awesome. Black Adam trailer. Dwayne The Rock Johnson, or just let's just call him Dwayne Johnson, stars in DC's anti-hero movie. DC comic fans are getting closer look at Dwayne Johnson's Black Adam in a new action-packed trailer. Black Adam stars Johnson as the powerful anti-hero and sworn nemesis of Shazam, who was played by Zachary Levi in the 2019 movie, and in the upcoming sequel, Shazam Fury of the Gods, coming next year. I think Johnson's going to bring a tremendous amount of charisma to this particular DC hero. He just has a commanding presence. It's quite impressive. Now, I am not the biggest fan of DC's ecosystem. I'm not a big fan of its universe, of its world building. I don't know how to describe it. In the past, I've described, well, I won't even bother. But at any rate, this article is over at variety.com by Wyatt Grantham Phillips. And so it says Johnson was originally supposed to enter the DC Universe as Black Adam in 2019 Shazam. However, his role was scrapped when the spin-off of his character was greenlit in 2017. In October 21, Johnson debuted a first look at the film on Twitter, which showed Black Adam breaking out of imprisonment after 5,000 years of captivity. This is all from the article, and you can go over and read the rest of it, really. But the let me see if I can. There's a so Shazam is an acronym that stands for the six ancient heroes whose powers Shazam, the entity, contains, empowered in the one. But it was broken up into Solomon, Hercules, Atlas, Zeus, Achilles, and Mercury. And so I think that in the new one, like his family from the first one, they all have these superpowers aligned with this particular set. I haven't followed the Omniverse of DC, but Black Adam is the anti-hero and enemy of Shazam, the entity, not the plurality. So I'm not quite sure what is going to come out of this, but it'll be interesting. And I haven't ever been interested in the comics from DC. So we'll see what comes of this. But I encourage you to go over to the Variety article and take a gander at it. Let me throw the URL into the chat and you can follow that over. And, or, I mean, you can wait and we can chat about stuff. The rest of these articles, I've got about 19, 20 of them. The next article is the Apple Passkey feature will be our first taste of true passwordless future. Apple and other tech giants want to get rid of passwords for online accounts and apps. Here's why that's going to be a great thing for your online account security. Let's click this link. It'll take us over to Apple Insider. I would love to get rid of passwords, passphrases, and lock it to my identity, and devices that I have on me that are locked to my identity. Obviously, the duty of care here is that you are in possession of the actual keys. So whatever it is that validates your identity beyond the often lost or timed out password. It's an archaic form of a key that is bound really to be lost to the degradation of memory over time. And sometimes you don't use it for a long period of time and suddenly you've forgotten it and you have to do a password reset anyway. And it's a one, two, three kind of a step to recover a lost password. So why not make it frictionless and basically give your devices, your phone or your watch or whatever, a means of validating your identity, particularly if your face is the key. I know that I can open up my MacBook Air and formerly my other MacBooks, and it will automatically see my face and unlock. And you can do that with Windows as well, but I can do it with my watch remotely. I've had to do that before to give access to somebody who wanted to be able to get something from my computer, and I wasn't in the office at the time. Anyway, this article is over at appleinsider.com by Mike Peterson. And so they talk about this. It says, while passwords may be familiar, they actually come with a number of disadvantages that pass keys could address. Here's what you should know about the feature and how it signals a broader move toward a more secure online ecosystem. So what are pass keys? Apple pass keys are essentially a type of biometric sign-on standard. Instead of typing a password to log into an app or online account, you use a passkey stored on your device. Passkeys are based on web authentication API, WebAuthn, a security standard that uses public key cryptography for authentication. You can think of a passkey as a digital version of something like a hardware security key. So they're There are a lot of different versions of this. So, like the government uses CACs, common access cards, that have bits of information embedded in them. But those aren't solely the only way that you can get in. You need the CAC card and your password. Once you set up a passkey on an account, you'll be able to use it to log in by authenticating with either Face ID or Touch ID. And that, I think, is brilliant. As long as the more sophisticated mousetrap can't be circumvented by more sophisticated mice. And that is kind of the nature of cybersecurity and security in general. The lockpicking lawyer, for instance, you build a superior lock, and someone as brilliant as the lockpicking lawyer will figure out a means to circumvent that. Look at it with a unique set of eyes, and you can find a different way in, be it analog or digital. It doesn't really matter. So eventually, we'll get away from physical keys and memory in terms of passwords. There are passwords and there are passphrases. Now there are passkeys, and passkeys are tied to something physical of you, not just you remembering something and typing it in. Do that with two-factor, and you've got something along the lines of you attempt to log in somewhere, and it notifies you that somebody is attempting to log in and then requests you to enter the pass key. And so it's a very robust system. And essentially, it requires you physically being present again, unless somebody figures out how to fake a fingerprint or make a hyper-realistic mask of you that can duplicate the Face ID mechanism. And I'm waiting for that to happen. I'm sure that there might be something out there that's like CIA level, but I haven't seen anybody hack with a face yet. The next article is over in the Tabletop Nights section. Town Building Sandbox RPG Pixel Shire announced for 2024 on Nintendo Switch, Xbox One, Xbox Series XS and X and S, and PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, and finally PC. I am not a console gamer. I hardly ever touch the Nintendo Switch. I have one, but others use it, not me. So, developer Kappa Bits has also announced that the game will be coming to early access in 2023. So now we're announcing a year and a half out. Let's go over to RPGsite.net. The author of this is James Galizio, or Galizio. And I love pixel games like this. It's just a lot of fun to play these things, and they're chill, and that's kind of my style. Not crazy screaming and hyperactive and just kind of like a controlled dumpster fire of activity. This is kind of chill. It's kind of fun. So that's what I'm looking for in games. I guess, I like being chill in my downtime. So at any rate, it says build the town of Pixel Shire and grow your community in a unique RPG sandbox, which makes life sim elements with town building, exploration, and combat. Express yourself by planning the town to your liking, master trades, get to know your neighbors, and explore the continent of Arcadia. I am a real big fan, though, of MMORPGs, and if you could make a Pixel Shire kind of game that's an MMO, where it's not limited in size, but you can still take over territory in a combat environment, and have kind of like a more chill PvP kind of environment, that would probably be my ultimately my perfect game. Although I do play first person shooters and whatnot when I get a chance, but usually I don't have a lot of time to commit. Okay, so let's go on to the next article, and that is in the Hatch Ideas channel. This is the Fed GDP tracker shows the economy could be on the brink of a recession. The Atlanta Fed's GDP Now tracker is now pointing to an annualized gain of just 0.9% for the second quarter. So the Atlanta Federal Reserve GDP Now tracker is now pointing to an annualized gain of just 0.9% for the second quarter, down from estimated 1.3%. This is a pretty dramatic downturn, which I continue to suggest that we will end up in recession by November of this year, and it will last about 2.5 years. That is my estimation, based on some random data that I've been looking at. And really, it's just an educated guess. It's not something that I could substantiate with statistics. So again, it's opinion. And most of this is, in fact, historical numbers change as more data comes out of historical analysis and reanalysis and again, reanalysis. There is a data point that I utilize in time that has changed so often that I no longer even require that data point from history because it has changed so much that it just stopped mattering. As long as the people do the due diligence necessary to find the number, I don't care where it's sourced from. Anyway, the first quarter result is down 1.5%. A second consecutive quarter of negative growth meets a rule of thumb definition for recession, and the National Bureau of Economic Research, the official arbiter of such, says the recession can include two straight negative GDP prints, but that's not necessarily the case. So, if it declines, again, it will end up, we will be around November, and we will be in recession, formally be in recession. And I think that it's largely profiteering. Somebody caught wind, the producers, the people that are at the very entry level of all of the goods that own a great deal of it, know that there is a ton of money in the system. It's all already filtering up to the top. And the middle class is being crushed by the burdens that we've all got. The problem is that corporations are getting bailed out, but the middle class, I've said this in a previous show, that the middle class is the mitochondria of the cell that is the economy of a country. And without them, the middle class being solvent, in to a great extent, there is no buying power. People just stick it away, and that impacts the entire performance. The only thing that continues to grow, and that's because they have the ability to sell industrial goods to foreign countries, are mega corporations, and the defense sector. And so there'll always be a massive amount of capital into the system. The only problem is that is a pretty pretty expansive vertical. I mean, it's a few companies with a large employee base, but it's all a silo of wealth going from foreign countries and the federal government up to those individuals, and not to the average Joe, not in any substantial amount. We're getting salaries and stuff, but we're not getting millions. So it says personal consumption expenditures, a measure of consumer spending that is responsible for nearly 70% of gross domestic product, saw a cut to a 3.7 gain from a previous 4.4%. Also, real gross private domestic investment now is expected to shave 8.5% off growth from the previous 8.3. So that's what I had just said is what this little paragraph says. Personal consumption expenditures, a measure of consumer spending that is responsible for nearly 70% of gross domestic product, right? The rest is everything else, industrial goods and stuff. This is a very bad time for people to be profiteering off of the invasion of Ukraine by Russia and poor weather and bad crop yield. I mean, it's just pure greedflation, and it's going to hamper long-term viability. It's going to take the middle class and smush it down a little bit, distancing itself from the upper class, and those in the lower level of upper class are going to get smushed down with them. So, like I said in the previous episode, if you think that there is a problem now, just wait. And this is the Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell, apparently not liking the small ice cream that he's about to be handed. Okay, anyway, the next article is over in the Reality Hacker section of Ohmtown. That's where it was aggregated to, but it's coming from Road to VR, hands-on, the Loomis prototype AR glasses are smaller and better than ever. Loomis's latest waveguide, dubbed Maximus, is now even more compact thanks to 2D image expansion. With impressive image quality and a more compact optical engine, the company is poised to have a leading display solution for truly glasses-sized AR. Please, Apple, buy them. So this is an article by Ben Lang over at Road to VR, and they're wearing these Loomis prototypes. And these are the kind of glasses that I would wear if they were augmented reality. And in time, even the things that are currently obstructing the field of view, the geometry can be changed in time so that it is hidden, literally hidden inside the frames. But it comes with time, and this is a prototype. So once the geometry gets fixed, the physics falls in line. Loomis's latest waveguide, dubbed Maximus. Okay, so it's been touting its Maximus waveguide as far back as 2017, according to this article by Ben Lang over at Road to VR. If you want to learn more about this, then go over to Road to VR. Follow the road from Ohmtown over to Road to VR, and then come on back and talk with me about this. I cannot wait until we have glasses that are augmented reality and afford us the ability to just walk around and consume data, obtain information, actionable information, while we are just walking wherever we want to walk. If I am tethered to a battery, fine. I'll take that if I can be an early adopter of this. But I want truly wireless. But it's all about the power density of the power supply. That's probably going to come with solid state batteries, moving away from lithium ion batteries. But it says, actually looking through the prototype glasses, you can see a reasonably wide 50 degree field of view. More importantly, an impressively uniform image, both in color and clarity. And really what this comes down to is if you have the ability to lock something in AR into three-dimensional space in the real world, and your devices have the ability to communicate with these things, these beacons, essentially, then you don't really need a wide field of view. You just, and you know, wider is better, obviously, and nobody will ever say that, you know, well, hey, you know what's better is a narrower field of view for VR or AR. But wider is always better, but even now with a 50 degree field of view, as long as you are looking at the relative location of the beacon, you could also have something pointing towards that direction saying, hey, there's a beacon over there. if you're in the AR world. What I really want is the ability to just put on glasses and have multiple displays thrown up in my three-dimensional space without having the monitors in front of me. If I need something that's higher resolution, higher quality, than what might be offered, then I'll use a monitor, but I would prefer having nothing on my desk except being my glasses. Just take my glasses, put them on. That'll pull me right into the cyberpunk world that I grew up with when I was younger. I used to play Cyberpunk, which then became Cyberpunk 2020. Now I'm past that time frame, and I still don't have cybernetic limbs, and I don't have my cyber deck, and I have all of this analog stuff in front of me. What I want is true wireless AR glasses so that I can still be immersed in the real world, but I can see my monitors in AR space just hovering there. At 60 hertz, I'd be happy with a 35-inch display in front of me, or like what I've got now. I used to have five monitors, now I'm down to three. I was feeling kind of trapped behind these monitors. It was really rough. Anyway, this will be coming. I really hope that it comes sooner than later. And it says, for Lumos's part, the company says it's been working closely with several so-called tier one technology companies, a category which would include Facebook, Apple, Google, and others. For years now, Lumos expects to see the first major consumer product incorporating its waveguide solution in 2024. So this is all fundamental science, and good luck to them. I hope that I get a chance to utilize this kind of technology. Okay, so let's continue on to the next. We're about a third of the way through today's news. And this next article is in the band to bezel category, which is about timekeeping. I am a big fan of the Apple Watch. I have a couple of mechanical watches, but or I should say conventional watches, but nothing that I normally talk about, particularly in this price range. After successful sales for all of the major houses in Geneva and Hong Kong last month, all eyes are on now on New York, where Christie's, Phillips, and Sotheby's will be host to a live auction at their Big Apple headquarters over the next week. So, Lot 24 at Phillips, and they actually end up talking about all of it. But let me click the link, and it'll take us over to Hodinkee, an article by Logan Baker. And as usual, the photography is always phenomenal. Sometimes I think that they're renders, but I don't think that anybody would render like a little scrap of the leather strap hanging down a little bit. That's a little bit too natural. So this has got to be a natural. Anyway, auctions is the section, and New York summer auctions are here. These are the top lots to watch at Christie's, Phillips, and the Sotheby's. Summer Bidden had me a blast. Summer Bidden happened so fast. That's their little subtitle. So they talk about each of these locations. All three of the leading houses have put together deeply impressive catalogs over 125 lots each. And it's worth noting that although Christie's and Sotheby's has consistently hosted live auctions this month, they're joined for the first time by Phillips, who are hosting their inaugural New York summer sale this weekend. So Christie's Important Watches of Exceptional Provenance, featuring the Cairo's Collection Part 3. It's June 8th through the 9th. So today and tomorrow, if you're listening to this now, then you have a chance. But by the time I post this, you'll only have tomorrow if you even pick up my podcast or watch it over on YouTube. It'll be there tonight. Lot 64, a very special split seconds chronograph. So the last watch, let's see if it's a run of 10 pieces for a price between $300,000 and $500,000, $300,000 and $500,000. Lot 94 is a fresh-to-market Rolex reference, 6263 Paul Newman Mark I, Oyster, Sato, Cosmograph, Daytona. And it's somewhere around $600 to $1 million. Lot 111 is a remarkable red dot. Let's see, an extremely uncommon example of a Patek Philippe, I think it's Patek, Philippe's reference 3448 perpetual calendar features an unexpected aperture between 3 and 4 o'clock that's filled with a bright red enamel. So why? The proverbial red dot seen here is an early example of a leap year indication. There you go. So how much is it? 800 to 1.6 million for a watch, folks. Lot 120, a watch that inspired history. That one's going to go somewhere between 2 and 400,000. Honorable mentions, they have a whole list of them. And they go into greater detail for each of these watches. And I'm not going to show them all. I encourage you to go, oh, I like this one. This one's really nice. Although it has a date window, it's not your traditional window. It's actually not a date window. What am I saying? Interesting. That's really interesting. Okay. And this one, is this the same watch? Yeah, this is the same watch. Shows all the mechanical gear works behind it. And this is one of those unique ones where they have all, again, I'll say it again, they all have the same framework, the same parts. It's always a unique design, though. And I love this one. So this one's really neat. It's got a skeletonized case back, and you can, it has a lot of dimensionality to it. Some watches are flat, and even though you can see the gear works, it's flat. But this, you can actually see, it's almost like a pool. You could just dive into it and swim around. It's so deep. It's really nice. I love it. Anyway, you can go over to Hodinkee and check it all out. I will scroll up to the top and just keep that link there in the show notes so that you can go and check it out on your own if you're interested in watches. And I'm interested in them too, but I'll never buy any of these watches. The next article is in the Continuity Report channel. Stranger Things 4 is already Netflix's number 3 most popular TV season ever among English language titles. I would agree. Yeah, that makes sense. The May 27th debut of the first 7 episodes of Stranger Things Season 4 marked Netflix's biggest premiere weekend ever, drawing in 287 million hours viewed in just 3 days. I'd love that. That would make me pretty darn popular, huh? But no, I don't have that. So be sure to follow me here on Twitch. And if you're watching this over on YouTube, like and follow me there. And if you are subscribing to me over on Apple Podcasts, I'm over on Google Play Podcasts. You can get me at Spotify as well. I'm pretty much all over the place. So keep in touch. Let's click this link. It takes us over to Variety.com, and Salome Hailu is the author of this article talking about Stranger Things 4. I binge watched that from beginning to end in, I think, maybe 2 days. Happened to land perfectly so that I could just sit there and grind away at this. And I loved it. It was fast. It was... to me, it wasn't marred with plot holes other than the fact that there's, you know, questionable physics. But it's a supernatural movie or show, so you can't really fault it. I suspend disbelief pretty well, unless I'm dragging some show into the Continuity Report, and then I will probably kick its butt. Nitpicking every little bit that I can because it's more entertaining that way. Anyway, it's kind of like a roast. At any rate, it says meaning the Stranger Things Season 4 still has 18 days to move up even higher on the chart. because of the first 28 days of availability. According to the streamer's newly released weekly top 10 ranking, Stranger Things Volume 4, or sorry, Season 4 Volume 1 has also smashed the record for most viewed show in a week among Netflix English-speaking TV series, with 335 million hours watched from May 30th to June 5th. So the previous title was Bridgerton, which racked up 252 million hours. Might as well round up the week of March 28th to April 3rd, its first full week. So blew past that. But Squid Game still holds the overall most. Yeah, as more people become, stats like this are dependent on time, so they're very temporally focused. As more people learn about the show, the service, or whatever, the number of hours viewed increases. So it's very subjective based on the time point. You know, if a bunch of people, if it goes viral, then suddenly people are enrolling in the service and then watching the show and then disenrolling. But I think that it's, this is always taken with a grain of salt. It's kind of like the time value of money thing. If you invest money now, it'll be worth more later, naturally, unless there's other things going on. But money in hand is worth more than possibly the future value, depending on where you invest it and if you leave it alone. There's a lot to it. But anyway, so this whole thing about it being the number one, yeah, locked in time, it will be number one. But in the future, you just never know. So that's pretty cool. Right now it looks like Netflix's top 10 list has Stranger Things season 4, then 1, the original, and then 2 and 3, all taking the top hours viewed. So pretty neat. And I love the show. It was pretty cool. Okay, so the next article, and it brought some 80s music back from the shelf, I guess you could say. In the next article that's in the Continuity Report channel, Paramount Chief Brian Robbins on the blockbuster success of Top Gun Maverick and getting close to the starting line with Star Trek. Paramount has been on a sizzling run, all five of its 2022 releases. A crop that includes Scream, Jackass Forever, The Lost City, and Sonic the Hedgehog opened in first place at the domestic box office, with Top Gun Maverick outpacing them all, the sequel to the beloved Tom Cruise film. This has actually brought about a lawsuit from the heirs of the original article of which Top Gun, the original 1986 movie, was based off of. Although they say in the movie itself that it was not even inspired by, it was suggested by, I think that's the phrase, suggested by. And I think that that's really interesting for a show to say. That said, they're actually, the family of the author had the ability to terminate the license, and they had to do it within a certain time frame. They had to wait a certain number of years. There was a really small window. I think it's like 5 years that they had to get this done. It's all part of intellectual property law, and they did it. But Paramount paused the release of Top Gun because they wanted it to be in theaters, not just a direct release. Well, now they were notified of the termination. They didn't renew the license, and they had right of first refusal, which is something that I require when somebody buys intellectual property from me. I want right of first refusal. So if they don't bring it to market, I want to be able to buy it back. Either at some negotiated rate or whatever the terms might be at the time that the contract is written. And so they didn't do it. And like, I don't Maybe it's not even enforceable, but the way that I have it written, we'll see. But in this particular thing, they actually notified Paramount and Paramount didn't follow up, and now it's in litigation. So we'll see what happens. I suspect that there will be a lot of arguing about it. I would love for that to be streamed because I'm very interested in intellectual property, business law, not so much other things. I just recently went through a pre-law program, paralegal program is what it amounts to, and I'm considering going into another program right now to get a master's in law. Because I don't want to go to law school in particular, like focused. It's a lot. I'm not 22, if you didn't notice. At any rate, this article about Paramount and their blockbuster success is written by Brent Lang, and it says Brian Robbins, who took over as head of the film studio in September, says its recent track record reaffirms the value of releasing blockbuster movies in theaters before debuting them on streaming or home entertainment, and he argues that the box office performance is partly due to a new approach that has been seen by the studio becoming more collaborative with corporate cousins such as CBS, MTV, and Nickelodeon. Interesting. So why was Top Gun Maverick successful? The author says, I'd be lying if they knew that Top Gun was going to open to 160 million and break all the records that it did. There was a lot of pent-up nostalgia for the movie, but our team was also able to do what a lot of people didn't think that they'd be able to do, which is bring the under 35 audience to this movie. Well, I don't know. And what's interesting about Top Gun Maverick versus Top Gun is in Top Gun, the original, you didn't know who the enemy, quote unquote, was. But apparently in Top Gun Maverick, I haven't seen it yet. I don't go to movie theaters anymore. I got a home theater, so I'll watch it at home. And so it's already on pre-order and I'm waiting for it. But suffice it to say that now the enemy is known in Top Gun Maverick. I don't know if that plays a role in it or not. One person that I read some articles from and I've heard from somebody else is that because now they know who it is, it's more interesting. It's Russia, just to let you know. They're not necessarily, but this was actually 4 years ago that this was first created. It just didn't, it got paused because of the pandemic. So at any rate, this is going to be a big movie, a big blockbuster movie that's going to have legs. It's going to continue. It's all modern filming. It's got a few people that are still, it's got a spectrum of ages that are in the movie itself. So, of course, it's going to appeal to a broad spectrum of people. And people are always curious and love a good action movie. That's why Mission Impossible movies are so great. People love the Mission Impossible movies. This next article is in the Hatch Ideas channel. Bill Gates just released his 5-book reading list for the summer, and this is what's on it. I'm just going to go straight over to the article at Business Insider. It's written by Sarah Jackson. Let's see here. It says the 5 books tackle matters like gender equality, political polarization, and more. Let's see here are the books. So the 5 books are The Power by Naomi Alderman, and Why We're Polarized by Ezra Klein, The Lincoln Highway by Amor Towles, The Ministry for the Future by Kim Stanley Robinson, and How the World Really Works by Vaclav Smil. The Science Behind How We Got Here and Where We're Going, How the World Really Works. So it says the book goes into this last one, and that's the only one that I'm really gonna, that's the only one I'm gonna talk about from the list. You can go over to Business Insider and follow the link through Hometown to get there. This book goes into depth on several fundamental forces of our modern world, including matters like energy production and globalization. And Gates says in the quote that's in this article, if you want a brief but thorough education in numeric thinking about many of the fundamental forces that shape human life, this is the book to read. So I haven't read this yet, but it says the author of Numbers Don't Lie. Okay, that's it for that article, but I've got about six more. This next article is in the Warcrafters channel, and it's about Diablo Immortal. Diablo Immortal microtransactions have sparked a brutal backlash. There was somebody did a report on this and said that it takes $110,000 to max out your Diablo Immortal tune character. It says it's less than a week since Diablo Immortal launched on mobile devices and PC in open beta, and the game is already facing a furious backlash from players over its in-game purchases. And basically, you just keep on purchasing to get ahead. Sorry for the long snippet. Normally, my articles are truncated, and I'll have to follow up as to why this is on this one. PCGamer.com is the source of the article, and Andy Chalk is the author. It says, the aggressive push to sell in-game items is not going over well on Reddit or Metacritic. And probably quite a few other people. In my career, I have found that if there is one person that is screaming about something loudly, there are quite a few others that are mumbling their position under the surface. And it says, to be clear, none of this stuff is absolutely essential. And principal designer Joe Grubb told PC Games N, I don't know what that is. And it just says PC Games N in May, that microtransactions are for optional purchases that are always a bonus. They never circumvent core gameplay. Nonetheless, the extent of the microtransactional push has sparked a powerful blowback. Well, you can say that about any mobile game. All of them are there to give you the endorphin rush for winning. And there are a lot of people that push it, you know, for their own means, for their own end, which is fine as long as everybody knows that it's similar to gambling. And as long as you address it, then you should be just fine. Don't go into debt playing a game, folks. And you can't blame the developer. Everybody knows that games with microtransactions are designed to stimulate you into playing the game. And you eventually hit a barrier in the game, and the only way to overcome it is to either grind, or you pay. That's just the nature of these games. So this next article is in the Mobile Channel. Man says excruciating 17 days in jail was caused by airline's mistake. Michael Lowe says that he was celebrating 4th of July with his friends in New Mexico last year when the cops showed up to investigate a disturbance. Before he knew it, Lowe says he was being taken away and booked into jail, but his alleged crimes had nothing to do with the party. There was a warrant for his arrest out of Tarrant County, Texas. Let me click that link and it'll take us over to The Hill. And Alex Martichaux, Nexstar Media Wire, is the author of this article. I'm going to pause this video. So Lowe says no one bothered to explain to him what was going on for 17 excruciating days and nights in the Quay County Detention Center. It wasn't until later Lowe realized he had technically been to Tarrant County on a layover flight through Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport. Now Lowe is suing American Airlines, saying the company is the reason he ended up in jail. And it all started back in 2020, the lawsuit shared with Nexstar explains. A duty-free store at the airport was burglarized, and surveillance cameras showed the suspect boarding American Airlines flight number 2248. That's the same flight Lowe was on. Yet when airport police asked American Airlines for a list of passengers on board the flight, the lawsuit claims the airline instead offered up just one name, Michael Loews. So it claims to show the burglary suspect in the included in the lawsuit. American Airlines could have provided an entire manifest for the flight or a list of all individuals who match a certain description, i.e., all white males over 18 and under 65. American Airlines also could have performed an adequate search to identify the correct suspect and provide his information to law enforcement. Instead, American Airlines affirmatively and wrongfully identified Mr. Lowe as the single suspect of the DFW Airport PD's felony investigation, which foreseeably led to Mr. Lowe being arrested and imprisoned for a crime he was innocent of. And that's the horrible part of it. Huh. So after 17 days, a guard told him that he was being released. Yeah. And the police will be able to say they were just doing their job. So good luck on your lawsuit against the airline. The next article, let me do something here. I'm curious. Pardon me one second. The next article is in the Hatch Ideas channel. Eli Lilly's new diabetes drug continues to show promise as an obesity treatment. Eli Lilly continues to work on commercializing its strong innovation pipeline, which is a key reason why CNBC Investing Club owns the stock. This is an article over at CNBC. That was a smooth way of saying their disclosure of that they have an interest in talking about this. Kevin Stankiewicz, I guess his name is. Wrote the article for CNBC. Where is it? No. What the heck? Let me click this. Takes us over there. I don't know what's going on. Oh my goodness. Anyway, let me check something real quick. Sorry for the dead air. I'll just have to move on. I'm sorry. Let's go on to the next article. Anyway, the diabetes drug that is lowering obesity. Basically, there is a very big tie between diabetes drugs and weight. In fact, people who are pre-diabetic and diabetic take certain medications, and that it leads to lowering weight. How the treatment works, I'm not absolutely, I don't know about the scientific processes of it, but essentially it lowers your blood sugar, it lowers your retention of fat, and you lose weight. But there is a new drug that I just read about that it's a series of injections. Each injection costs $11,000. And people, I'm sorry. I'm mixing two different studies. Sorry, because I just read two different things. The one about the obesity and diabetes is that there was a series of injections and people who took who were given the treatment lost upwards of 40%, not upwards of 40%, it was 40% of their body weight. When normal treatment was 5 to 7% by just working out and controlling your diet, with this medication, it lowered dramatically people's weight. So I would love to get a hold of that because I have some weight that I can't seem to lose. I've gone so far as to buy a Tonal. So I'm getting a device that I can bolt to my wall and work out regularly because I don't go to the gym anymore and I'm working from home. And so I'm not getting that side effect of being forced to walk around in an office. So hopefully a drug like this can be given to somebody so that they can lose, at a measured rate, a healthy rate, this excess in those who are definitely in the obese side. Because obese is really a weird term. Because you would think that somebody who is obese is like really big, but that's not the case. I don't think that many people who are, my size would be considered obese. So let me continue on. I get pulled down this rabbit hole. So the next article is in the Hatch Ideas channel. Microsoft HoloLens exec resigns. The HoloLens co-creator Alex Kipman is resigning from Microsoft. We'll go over to the source. It's over at Business Insider. And we won't go too far into this, other than the fact that they are resigning. Current and former employees allege Kipman repeatedly got away with inappropriate behavior toward women employees, including unwanted touching, something many suggested is part of a widespread pattern of misconduct in Microsoft. I think that takes place in a lot of organizations that other companies get accused of being woke, which, okay, why is that a slam on a company that they are woke? Hate to break it to you, but being enlightened and respecting somebody else's space and not treating somebody else like this, unwanted touching is just not acceptable. There's even language that you shouldn't do in the office out of respect for the people that are in the room. And, if you can read the tea leaves and read the room and even go so far as to even suggest, hey, does anybody care if somebody cracks an off-color joke? I mean, if you find out that nobody cares if you tell a blue joke, tell a joke. But it's not something that is generally accepted. So don't do this. Don't say things to people that, well, I don't know. The people that need to learn this lesson aren't going to listen to it, to the Title IX training and the ethics training that most corporations suffer everybody through. I would never sit there and touch people. I don't care. It's just not acceptable. Three sources told Insider that managers warned employees not to leave women alone around Kipman. My God. My God. I'm just going to leave this alone. I need to move on. The next article is in Mobile Channel. States considering nixing antiquated slavery language from founding documents. I don't know why you're considering it, states. Nix that stuff. Keep it in an archived version of the founding documents of your state. But for crying out loud, it isn't a part of history in that it is something to admire. Slavery language in your founding documents shows just how unabated your dehumanizing of other humans simply because of the color of their skin was, and it needs to go away. Remember it always as a feature of the creation of America, because it's true, folks. You can't ignore it. The founding of the United States, the history of the United States is even predating the United States, right? The moment we landed here, we started taking stuff from people, and everybody thinks that it's okay because, somebody said something. Oh, it's okay. It's manifest destiny. But no, and I'm not even suggesting that we have to give up everything, but the fact of the matter is ignoring it and saying that it didn't happen or that it's a respected part of your history and cultural heritage. You got to be absurd to think that way. Let it stay as a historical document, but remove the language from the founding documents as they are now, because founding documents and documents in general are living things. They should change with time to keep them temporally relevant, culturally sound, and respectful of all of the people that are in that particular region, that state. But hate to break it to you even more, just because I live in Louisiana doesn't mean that I am Louisiana, you know? I can move to another state and I'm not Texan. I can move to California and I'm not a Californian. I'm a citizen of the United States. I just happen to be a resident of a state and a city and a town and a whatever hyperlocal location, you know, Starbucks down the street. We shouldn't be bound by this as an identity. But again, maybe it's just me. I'm looking around wondering, you know, do people actually think that this is something that should be respected? Louisiana State Senate voted last week to add a measure to this year's ballot that would modernize the state constitution to explicitly prohibit slavery and involuntary servitude. The unanimous Senate vote came about a week after the House voted 96-0 in favor of placing the measure before voters in November. Sometimes enlightenment takes doing and not necessarily just putting it up for a vote. I know that sounds really dystopian, and I'm gonna leave this in in my stream, and in the article, and in the posting and in the podcast over at YouTube and on Apple and all that. But it's considering leaving language in it that even begins to consider other people as slaves or even involuntary servitude in any way should have been nixed a long time before the 21st century. You know, when we're sitting there figuring out quantum mechanics and being able to measure a quantum bit in one place and know what the quantum bit is going to be on the other side of the world, and you're still arguing about if slavery, there's something wrong with this timeline. Something seriously wrong with this timeline. A constitution that was adopted in 1974 still has the language. So this is an article over at The Hill by Reed Wilson, and so it says here, the current constitution adopted in 1974 prohibits slavery and involuntary servitude, except in the later case of punishment for crime. And that's speaking directly to the fact that if you're a prisoner in jail or prison, you can be forced to do work for pennies, and that those pennies are spent in jail for, you know, an extra cupcake or something. And it's all of this. Every state that still has language in its constitution that revolves around slavery and indentured servitude, all of that, it should all be, they should all be admonished. It says founding documents in 19 states still allow some version of slavery or involuntary servitude as punishments for crimes. Now, there's a distinct difference between the two. Okay. But involuntary servitude is a different level of slavery entirely. You know, I'd like to know what the difference is between. So it says slavery is permitted, although never actually used, in Oregon, Nevada, North Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Indiana, Kentucky, Tennessee, Arkansas, and Mississippi, and involuntary servitude is included, though never used, in California. Wow. Kansas, Iowa, Michigan, Ohio, North Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, and Louisiana, and all of those states should be forced to go look at a mirror. The entirety of the state should be forced to go look. And I'm not talking about the people in it, because there's a lot of people that just don't know about all of that. Maybe now, maybe they will hear about it in in my stream, but most people don't even know that that's in the documents. But that's what shining the light is. You got to shine that light, watch all the cockroaches run. Okay, so the next article is over in The Word in Tech. TikTok launches custom avatars to rival Snapchat's Bitmoji and Apple Memoji. TikTok is launching a new feature that lets users turn themselves into custom animated avatars in the style of Apple's Memoji, Snapchat's Bitmoji, and Meta's avatars. The feature is rolling out globally today, and is accessible from the app's camera alongside TikTok's various other effects. I would love to know if both the on-camera image and the avatar is being recorded somewhere separately. Because we can do that. You know, you swipe a credit card and I can make a copy of it. One goes in one direction, one goes through processing. That's absolutely doable. And so even recording something, streaming something, I can split my camera so that one side is unadulterated and the other side is an emoji. Curious about that in the context of TikTok. Okay, so this article is over at The Verge, and it is written by James Vincent. And that's really the nuts and bolts of that article. So if you want to know more about it, then follow the link over to The Verge and go through Hometown, please. And since this is the end of today's show, I'm going to take you back to the front page and we are going to watch the page refresh. And if all goes well, the error was corrected. And be sure to follow over on Twitch and on YouTube and on Apple Podcasts and Google. I'm over there, and Spotify, and pretty much everywhere else. So let me know if you want Hometown to be hosted somewhere else, and I will make it so. And again, the front page is always updating. Thanks for coming, and I'll see you tomorrow. I'm guessing 11 o'clock. Today we had a technical problem, which forced me to do it today at 2 or 1 o'clock. But I'm trying to get back on track at 11. So I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks. Bye-bye.